You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. San Francisco District Attorney Chesa Boudin is not a bland bureaucrat who flies under the radar. He's gotten national attention as the top prosecutor in San Francisco because of his unique life story and his unusual and divisive pledge to end mass incarceration. But when things go wrong, that spotlight can be scorching. In this latest installment of our series, The Progressive Prosecutor, Holly J. McDeed reports.
It was New Year's Eve 2020, and in San Francisco, 45-year-old Troy McAllister was driving a car that police say he stole from a date. He was out on parole at the time. Police say he was high on methamphetamine, and he drove through a red light and hit two women, killing both.
As the car spun, the police source says it smashed into two women walking in the crosswalk and sent them flying.
But this is not just about a deadly hit and run. For starters, the driver had already spent 5 years in jail while awaiting trial in a robbery case. And while out on parole, he had been arrested 5 times, but never charged with a crime. NBC News spoke with the suspect's uncle after the crash.
I don't understand why they released him. I really cannot understand that.
Chesa Boudin spoke about this case on Facebook Live. He explained that when McAllister was arrested, the DA's office referred him to parole rather than charge him.
When our office looked at the cases, we decided because they were nonviolent, because he wasn't arrested for anything related to drunk driving, reckless driving, guns, violence, that referring him to the primary supervising agency, the parole department, was the appropriate thing.
People accused of violating parole can be given additional restrictions, treatment, or punishment by parole officers. But McAllister's state parole was never revoked, and parole officials have said they followed policies related to this case.
With great scrutiny and 2020 hindsight, we would love to have done things differently.
But much of the media focused on Boudin's role in the tragedy.
Chesa, right away, criticism over the way you have handled the situation, that undoubtedly is at a fever pitch.
I mean, including KGO's Dion Lin, who interviewed him shortly after the two women were killed.
Why are you blaming the parole office instead of taking direct accountability here?
This is not about blaming parole. We all have to depend on each other to do the job properly. Here, when Mr. McAllister was arrested on December 20th, the San Francisco Police Department neglected to even notify his parole agent. And we're going to take a hard look at why it is that we relied on the San Francisco Police Department to communicate to parole when we could have done it ourselves.
I feel like this is the response you give whenever we end up speaking to you after the countless number of nonviolent crimes, for example, where victims want answers and we get the same lip service. What is your response to them?
Well, Dion, I don't think I've spoken with you or been on your show before, so you certainly haven't gotten lip service from me.
Some of Boudin's critics also thought he was deflecting responsibility, and they took action. The day after the deadly crash, an investor set up a GoFundMe account to raise $75,000 to hire a journalist to investigate him. And soon, an online petition was launched by failed mayoral candidate Richie Greenberg to recall Boudin. Meanwhile, San Francisco Police Union President Tony Montoya suggested that the killing may point to a bigger problem in the DA's office.
Many of the issues we brought up during his candidacy for DA's office, our fears have now become a reality.
Montoya called for an independent body to audit the prosecutor's office.
The citizens of San Francisco have the right to know what's going on in their DA's office, and that's all we're asking.
Nancy Tung, a former San Francisco prosecutor who ran against Boudin in the DA's race, was also critical.
As a prosecutor, I never rely on parole to make sure that a case is taken care of.
She says Boudin's office should have considered what happened each time McAllister was referred to parole.
I think that also once you take a look at the overall record of someone, what they've been doing while they've been out on parole, have they accumulated a number of cases, a number of arrests in a short amount of time while they've been on parole, that indicates that they have not yet been rehabilitated and that they actually continue to be a danger to public safety.
We almost never hear about the calls prosecutors make, but they assess risk every single day. They are asked to weigh consequences, like the risk to the community when someone is incarcerated before they're proven guilty. They're asked to predict outcomes when people are given second chances. Prosecutor Nancy Tung understands the power in that discretion.
At the end of the day, if something happens down the line, am I going to be able to live with myself? And it's all a judgment call.
Any investigation or audit into Boudin and his office won't tell the whole story of what happened and what went wrong when the two pedestrians were killed. Because it's not just about a case, a DA, or a department. It's about the complexities of how different players in the justice system calculate risk and make those judgment calls. Mission Local reporter Joe Eskenazi saw the outrage over Boudin erupt online and in the media, and he challenged the logic of the critiques. He says the rhetoric he's heard around this case feels familiar.
DAs throughout history never paid a price for being tough on crime. The more people you could throw in jail, the better. And if there were people who were still in jail that maybe shouldn't have been there, nobody was concerned with that. It was better just in case to have people locked up, just in case.
So Eskenazi decided to look into the specifics of the case. He says in the process, he learned the details of how the suspect, Troy McAllister, pinballed through the justice system. And he says this case is maddeningly complex.
Now, people are dead, and that didn't have to happen. We shouldn't assume that this is the natural consequence of all of the actions that took place. This is kind of a flukish thing.
Flukish, he says, because the outcome seems only predictable in hindsight.
We could predict that this man would reoffend, and we might even predict that people will be harmed, but it's very hard to predict that people will be harmed in this way.
And even though McAllister was arrested several times since being paroled, Boudin has said he did not charge him because he expected state parole agents to take action. So Boudin deferred to them. There seems to be a basic communication problem.
He was referred to parole, I think, five times in a short period. And at no point was there some kind of monitor or somebody going through that said, hey, this is happening a lot. What are you doing over there? You know, maybe we should take more steps.
Meanwhile, parole has said none of McAllister's arrest after he was released in 2020 resulted in any criminal charges by the DA.
The problem here is that these offices seem to have, A, talked past one another, and B, the DA's office didn't seem to know what kind of repercussions these referrals to parole had on Mr. McAllister.
But there are other issues at play, too. There's also the new reality that changes calculations of risk. For the past year, the criminal justice system has been making decisions during a super contagious pandemic. Wes Van Teicher is a reporter with the Sacramento Bee, and he got hold of records related to how state parole has responded to COVID-19. He found parole agents were told to take a hands-off approach.
Don't go into people's homes to do the checks of their living quarters. Don't do drug tests. And kind of most pointedly in the Bay Area, supervisors instructed agents that they must not search for parole violations.
Parole appeared to be weighing the risks of COVID-19 and the potential dangers of not monitoring parolees as closely as usual.
Tens of thousands of inmates have been infected with the coronavirus. Lots of prison employees have also been infected. There have been deaths, and coronavirus spreads more easily in prisons and people are more likely to die.
And even before COVID-19, the state has been moving away from incarceration and towards rehabilitation.
That seems like a laudable goal for the state. The thing that stands out to me about this case is just that it happened over and over again, that he was arrested, then released, and then arrested, and released five times in 7 months.
So given all of the variables, why has Chase Boudin taken the most heat? Santa Clara University law professor W. David Ball says people often search for the most simple explanations in the wake of deadly tragedies. And the simplest answer is the so-called progressive prosecutor is too soft on crime.
I dare say if somebody is really convinced that Chase Boudin made a bad choice, then they should be able to go today to people who are being released on parole, and you should ask them, which of these people is going to get into a car accident and kill two other folks? And if you can't predict that now, then I don't know why you think that anyone at the DA's office should have been able to predict it then.
And that, Ball says, ignores the more complicated issues that often lead to crime in the first place, like poverty, education, and trauma.
I think it lets us off the hook when we have these very, very simple causal stories. Hey, if you let this person out, they will murder someone.
Ball can't help but think about the advertising blitz during the 1988 presidential race between George H.W. Bush and Michael Dukakis, then governor of Massachusetts.
Bush and Dukakis on crime.
One attack ad focused on Willie Horton, an African-American man in Massachusetts. He committed a series of gruesome crimes while on a state-run furlough program.
Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
Dukakis lost that race, and some analysts say the ad marked the beginning of a new tough-on-crime era, marked by lengthy and discriminatory sentences. Boudin is aware of that history and wants to right what he sees as the wrongs of the past. His campaign focused on the idea that he was a person who could help San Francisco rethink the entire equation and move beyond the simple solutions.
Simply sending more people to jail and prison for longer periods of time does not equate to public safety. It's not that simple. There are cascade effects. There are ripple effects. There are economic implications. There are social implications.
But releasing people from jail without support on the other side has implications too. During his campaign, Boudin also pledged to make every arrest an opportunity for intervention.
Transforming lives away from crime. If we're doing that effectively, then when people are in jail for 2 or 3 days, we can pair them with the services and the supports that they need in a way that keeps our community safe and prevents them from getting rearrested.
That didn't happen in this case. Instead, Troy McAllister was arrested and cycled in and out of jail. Boudin relied on parole to provide the intervention he talked about during the campaign. Parole could have sent him back to prison for any number of infractions, and that didn't happen. So police say Troy McAllister, high on methamphetamine, stole his date's car and hit and killed 2 people on New Year's Eve, and that didn't have to happen either. It's a complicated, tangled web of decision points in a dysfunctional system, and now 2 people are dead. The brother of one of the victims, 27-year-old Hanako Abe, spoke to NBC News.
From Japan, Abe's brother says while the family is heartbroken by Abe's death, they don't blame McAllister, they blame a system that let him down.
But for many of Chase Boudin's critics, the solution is simple. Push the progressive prosecutor to step down. Boudin has no plans to do that. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
Thanks, Holly. That story was co-reported with Alice Wolfley.